I was somewhat older when I was married than most of you will be. In fact, I was 30 years old. And so you know what year I was married, so you can figure out how old I am in case you're interested in that. So I've had some experience in living with girls, quite a few girls, in fact. And before I left home, I remember thinking, well, I can get along with anyone. I had been classified as easygoing and not hard to please. But I was untested in the area of living with people outside of my family, and soon learned that living with others was different than living with my family. And I've, in counting the number of girls that I have lived with in college and in an apartment as a working girl, in Navigator Homes, and then at Glen Eyrie as a single girl, I came up with the number of roughly 50. And Russ and I have lived in the Pink House for 2 years, and we've had between 25 and 30 people live here with us. Right now we have five single girls. This is a huge bedroom beyond that door, and we usually have, four or five girls in there, and right now we have two fellows who live in our basement. And I must say, with some of these people that I've lived with, on my part, it's been a matter of enduring, sometimes even ignoring, and not really getting involved with them. But with others, I've had a desire to have a more meaningful relationship and get involved in their lives. And I know that you have found, you find this true today, that some you like better than others, and some you just soon, you know, that they go away and leave you alone. I spent almost 3 years as a single girl here at the Glen. Part of that time, well, for 2 years, unengaged. The other was when Russ and I were engaged. And part of, a large part of the training at the Glen is to teach us how to live with other people. Missionary statistics prove that more people return from the mission field because they cannot get along with their co-laborers than for any other reason. Which is sad, isn't it? So we're going to talk about what hinders a successful living relationship or living situation, and what has to be present for one to exist. Those will be the two main things that we'll be talking about. And you might ask, well, why should I want to succeed in my living situation? After all, it's just for a few months, just for this school year, just for this semester or quarter, whatever you're on. But I feel if we belong to Jesus Christ, we should desire to succeed in everything we do. Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, "Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might. Put your whole heart in it." Psalm 1:3 talks about the godly man, and it says, "Whatsoever he doeth shall prosper or succeed." And if you don't have this desire, then I would suggest that you examine your relationship to Christ. And I know that that's one of the reasons you're here this week, to examine your relationship to Christ and see what's wrong. And I know that when I began to desire to serve Him and live for Him, then I started working out some of my problems that I had living with other people. What you learn in living with other girls will benefit you greatly when and if you are married. And I would say that God probably has marriage for the majority of you here in this room. So you can just consider it as preparation for marriage. I think it's really one of the best, just living with other people. First, we're going to talk about common problems, and then we'll get to the more positive. And the reason for mentioning the negative characteristics is so you'll be aware of what might be hindering a successful interpersonal relationship. I'm going to mention broad categories, and I really wish we had more time because I'd like for you to give examples under the broad categories. But I know that the more interaction we have, the more time it's going to take, and we just really don't have it. So, but if you would like to share some things, I want you to feel free to do that. Number one on my list is thoughtlessness. And quickly, can you think of some examples of this in living with other people? How do you feel that you are thoughtless, or other people that you know? This is so basic. Right. Right. Okay. Yes. And I don't know if very many of you are light sleepers, but I happen to be one, and I've spent many hours in turmoil, in fact, in that bedroom, just because of that. People staying up later and leaving the light on or talking or leaving the radio on or something. And if you're not a light sleeper, you don't really realize what a problem it is. But it makes you more sensitive to other people, I think, if you have a hard time sleeping when others are up. I'd say that's a very common problem. Matthew 7:12 says, I'm sorry, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I was going to add something else, like maybe having the friends in when your roommate wants to study.
Right. That's a good point. That's a good point. Matthew 7:12, as you would that men should do you even so to them. We really should treat other people like we want to be treated. Okay, we're going to go on. Selfishness. What are some examples under that? What about your plans? We have our own little plans, and we really don't want to change them to accommodate others, do we? Selfish with our things that we own. And I really believe that God has given us the things that we own, and we should take care of them. And I don't know that we always should loan out everything that we have. If you have, something that an expensive piece of equipment like a sewing machine, I don't know that you would want to loan it out. But I think the heart toward it is the important thing. We have to be willing to, but yet we still have to protect our things. Selfish with our time. We really don't want to get involved because it takes time. It really does take time to be involved. To go into the room next door to you and say, well, how was your day? You're getting involved and it takes time because you may spend the next 2 hours, you know, having that girl cry on your shoulder because she hasn't had such a good day. But it's being willing to get involved. Number three, faithlessness. And some verses under that, Proverbs 25:19, confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint. And just having this torn ligament in my thumb has really taught me that, you know, I need it. I can't do a lot without it. Proverbs 25:19. Proverbs 13:17, a bad messenger plunges men into trouble, but a faithful ambassador brings healing. Now, I'm not sure of the complete meaning of that. That is, I think, living. Both of those, the first one was King James, but I think 13:17 is the living. And I know even here at the Glen, one of the hardest things that the girls have to do is being faithful in performing their duties in their room. And that we should try to set the example in this area. to our roommate, to our friends, to our parents, be an example in keeping our room.
Would faithlessness also include, like, talking about other people, like if your roommate shared a secret with you, that and then you're going by all of them?
Yes, it would. Mm-hmm. I think I have that under another category later, but it certainly would fall under faithlessness. It certainly would. I think being on time is another big thing. Being where you should be, when you should be, and being there when you say you will be. I mean, keeping the appointment plus being on time. Carrying out small duties that people ask you to do. Oh, and a verse under this that I don't have written down is, he that is faithful in that which is least is also faithful in much. You know, if we're faithful in our small responsibilities, we will be in the big responsibilities. Okay?
So would faithfulness be like being faithful toward your duties or what?
That plus, what else would it be, you think?
Like she said, not blabbing all over the floor if your roommate told you a secret.
Uh-huh. I think it's a lot of things, those two included.
Don't you think I've been talking about the process of knowing? You know, knowing what you're capable of doing. Well, you know, I think sometimes we're talking about what we're possibly capable of doing.
Hmm.
We need to know our own potential and impact.
Good point. Good point. Mm-hmm. There are many more that we could mention. But we'll go on because of the time. The next one that I have down, number four, is jealousy. Do you ever have a problem with jealousy? If you're a typical woman, I know you do. I don't think men have as much problem with this as we. We can be jealous of someone who seems to be more, quote, spiritual than we are. Someone's personality, they're more outgoing, more winsome. They have more friends, it seems. The way they look, of their talents. James 3:16, where envy and strife are, there is confusion, or another word would be disorder, in every evil work. And don't you know, when you've been in jealousy, there is disorder in your heart. It's like a cancer that eats away. It's a horrible thing. Hebrews 13:5, let your conversation be without covetousness. And be content with such things as you have, for he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Proverbs 27:4, jealousy is more dangerous and cruel than anger. Jealousy can be more of a subtle thing. Usually people know when we're angry. But we can really be fighting this whole thing of jealousy inside of us. It's really something to cast out of your life. Really work on it. Really do. Number five, the problem of borrowing from other people. Proverbs 22:7, borrower is servant to the lender. If you borrow from people, you're their slave, according to the word. And I've heard it said if you borrow the same item consistently, then it must be a need, so go out and buy it. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't ever borrow. Like if you have a new dress and your roommate's earrings would go so nicely with it. But it can be a bad habit with some people. And there again, of course, taking care of the things that you do borrow. Number six, communication or the lack of communication. Have any of you read Tournier's book To Understand Each Other? In that, he says that you have to want to communicate before you will. And I know so often it's easy to take for granted that people know information. Like if you have a change in your schedule this week, you probably would assume that the girls you're living with know about this change. But don't assume it. Why don't you just take the time to inform them? Yes, To Understand Each Other. Tournier, Tournier. I think his first name is Paul, but I'm not really sure. Is it? So it's a little thing of caring enough to tell. And when you're leaving for the evening, do you just sort of prance out the door and say, we'll see you later, and your friend has no idea where you're going when you'll be back? It's just consideration. And on the Glen, it's we have a gatekeeper. And I know sometimes I feel, oh, I just like to leave the Glen and have no one know, you know, just a little privacy. But that's pride. I mean, what does it hurt if people know, really? And they don't have to know, especially where you're going. But if you have an emergency phone call, it's just for your good that people know where you are or that you are going out. So it's just consideration. There are always the 10% that don't get the word. Of course, it's our responsibility to ask around, too. But just keep people informed of things. Then number 7, and this has been mentioned before, the problem of untidiness. First of all, maybe the way you keep your own personal self, your possessions, your closet, your books, the bathroom, your car. It's for people who are really neat and clean, it's really a bugaboo to live with people that aren't. I've experienced that myself. Number 8 is criticism, and we've talked about this under faithfulness, the thing of gossip. When I first came to the Glen, I had some criticism in my heart. This was several years ago, because I felt that the people didn't meet the standard that I had for them. I had them up on a pedestal. I thought that they never sinned, and so I was disappointed, and I started being critical in my heart. And so one of the staff people shared with me that Moses' brother and sister, I don't remember the brother's name, but the sister's name was Miriam. When they criticized Moses, that God smote Miriam with leprosy, remember that? And I thought, well, God probably won't take care of me in that way, but he will deal with me because he does look after his servants. And so it helped my problem of criticism of other people. Proverbs 17:9 says, love forgets mistakes. Nagging about them parts the best of friends. Love forgets mistakes. Just a matter of accepting other people and knowing that we're sinners too. Romans 14:4 in the Phillips says, who are you to criticize the servant of somebody else, especially when that somebody else is God? For it is to his own master that he gives or fails to give satisfactory service. So that person will have to answer to God. We don't, you know, have to criticize them. Number 9, and of course all of these result in disunity. But that's the number 9 that I have listed, disunity. Proverbs 17:14 in the Living says, it's hard to stop a quarrel once it starts, so don't let it begin. Just don't let it begin. Yes,
What was the reference in Romans?
14:4 in the Phillips translation. Psalm 133:1 says, how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. And you've gone into a home and you feel the tension in the air. I've been in a restaurant and there was a little conflict maybe between the waitress and one of the other employees. And it almost makes you sick because you can just feel it in the air. And there's just unity. And it's so, unity is pleasant, isn't it? It gives you a comfortable feeling. It's good to be around. Ephesians 4:3 says, endeavor or work to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. And it does take work. It takes work in a marriage relationship to keep unity. And of course, the thing that causes disunity, according to Proverbs 13:10, is pride. It says, only by pride cometh contention. And it's usually because one person doesn't want to give in. He wants to stand up for what he thinks is right instead of giving in. I won't read this one. Philippians 2:2, it talks about being like-minded. Okay, let's go to the more positive side.
Well, in some cases, isn't it good to not give in? Like if your roommate is kind of not falling out with the Lord and doing stuff?
Well, I think, yes, I think so. But there again, I think it's our attitude. What's really in our heart? If someone is sinning, is morally sinning, then I think it's our responsibility to to go to them and try to help them or to tell them that they're doing wrong. But I think I'm talking about if it's some little something that bugs us and we want them to get it squared away because it bugs us, maybe it's our problem more than theirs. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's a certain way that she brushes her teeth and you don't like it. Just some little trivial thing like that. But I see what you mean. Why don't you discuss it with some of the girls later and come up with some ideas? I think it's a real good point. We just really don't have the time right now. And I'm really sorry. I wish we did. Okay, so those characteristics necessary for a satisfying living situation, number one on the list, of course, is love. And we hear about this a lot, especially today. Mark 12:31 talks about loving your neighbor as yourself. And I've heard it said that we love our neighbors, or if we don't love ourselves, we can't love our neighbor. And I think it's very true. I've seen this in people who had a hard time accepting other people. And I think it's simply because they do not accept themselves. So you will love your neighbor as you love yourself. 1 John 3:18, and I'd like for someone to read it in the living, please. 1 John 3:18. But I'm going to go on to another one while you find it. Colossians 3:14 says, and above all, put on charity, put on love. And when we get up in the morning, we do things in certain order to get dressed. We put on our lingerie. I don't know who this tape is going to. We put on our dress, we put on our shoes, our makeup, our perfume. So as I was thinking about, it says put on charity. When do we put on charity? And I thought, well, as we're walking out the door, we have our coat on, and then to cover the whole thing, we put on charity. But I thought, well, no, that isn't right. Because the minute we get out of bed, we start having contact with other people, probably, if we're living with people. So we have to put charity even before we get out of bed. Isn't that neat? We put it on, just like we do our dress. Okay, would someone read 1 John 3:18, please, in living?
Little children, let us stop just saying we love people. Let us really love them and show it by our actions.
Isn't that good? Right. It's so much more than just saying, well, I love you, but it's really showing what we do. And that's the hard part. That's the hard part. Of course, it's easy, too, to say give gifts, because you don't have to really get involved when you give a gift. You can just say, well, here's a birthday present and happy birthday. But maybe that isn't getting involved. So sometimes we take the easy way out. Number two, submission. And here again, it's a good preparation for marriage. And I know that some women cringe at this word. They really do. Especially today. But it is scriptural. And if you can get this issue settled before you're married, it's going to be much easier being married. But it's not only in marriage, it starts before that. It does say submit to your husband, but 1 Peter 5:5 talks about the younger submitting to the elder, but then it says, yea, all of you be subject one to another. I submit to you. And when I first came in contact with a navigator, someone said to me, pray for an open heart. I didn't even know what an open heart meant. Well, I prayed for an open heart. And I'm glad I did. And I still do. And I think we should adapt the attitude of I can learn from everyone. I can learn something from every one of you in this room. It may be how to make a bed better than I do, how to bake bread, or how to tie my shoe, or whatever, but we can learn something from everyone. So have that attitude. Yes?
A workable definition of submission.
Oh, me. Let's see. I don't think it means not having our own idea. And I don't think it means never expressing our idea. But I think it means, I don't know if giving up is a good word, giving up our...
pride.
Our what?
Pride.
Our right to conform to someone else's thoughts or ideas or whatever. That isn't the very best one. Can anyone add something to that?
Being willing to consider somebody else's ideas as being better than your own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we have a scripture coming up on that. Not just your ideas being better, but or their ideas being better. Did that sort of give you an idea?
Well, I know we toss that word around.
Right.
Like we don't, I don't really know what.
That's right. Well, why don't you look at the definition? Get a good dictionary and look it up. I think it's a good question.
I heard a tape one time when they said that a better word than submit was to respond.
Yes, I think that's part of it. I think that's a good part of it. I know with Christ, he values my ideas and my counsel. And often when he's making decisions, he will come to me and say, what do you think? He doesn't always accept them. But at least he has maybe a more objective idea than he would have, since he might be more personally involved in the issue than I. And so it doesn't mean that your husband will never ask you or never accept, you know, what you say. But in the end, it's his responsibility. He is responsible for the decision he's made. So even though I may not agree with him, I know before God he's responsible, so I have to trust God. If he's made the wrong decision, that things will work out. And really, when you think in light of eternity, what does it really matter whether we're right or wrong, whether we give in to the other person? Does it really matter? It really doesn't. In light of eternity. But I think it's just, there again, our pride. We want to be right. We want, you know, to be the important one. But it doesn't have to be that way. It's just not that important. Number three, self-control. James 1:19 talks about being swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. You listen intently, but when it comes time to say something, think before you speak. I think that's what it means, slow to speak. Slow to give an opinion. Slow to retaliate when someone says something you don't like. James 1:26 talks about bridling the tongue. I'm sure that you're familiar with that. James 3:2-6 talks about the tongue as well. We won't take time to go into that. Proverbs 15:1 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but harsh words cause quarrels. And haven't you found that true? Someone comes to you and they're really upset with you. So they just, you know, they really let you have it. But if you can compose yourself enough to stop and think, get control of your emotions before you answer, my, what a difference it makes. It really does. The other person, for one thing, is just sort of floored that you haven't really talked back to them. And it's scriptural. That's what it says, that that's what a soft answer will do. Soft answer turns away wrath. Proverbs 16:32, he that rules his spirit is better than he that takes a city. If you can control, have self-control, you're better than a warrior. Better than someone going in to take a city. What time is it? It's time to stop.
I know when I asked God 15:3, he that keeps his mouth keeps his life.
He that
keeps his
mouth keeps his life. That's a good one. 13:3. I have to remember that. I don't have a pencil right now. Let me just quickly go through these. Keep short accounts. Ephesians 4:26. The last part says, don't let the sun go down on your wrath. You will have to make the first step to make things right. The other person more than likely will not come to you. Matthew 5:23-24 talks about if we go to the altar with a gift, and I think this is coming to the Lord in prayer, and we find, or the Lord brings to mind someone who has something against us, it says, leave your gift and go make things right with that person. It doesn't say that that person, because he has something against you, should come to you. It says that it's your responsibility to go to them. So it's always our responsibility to make things right with the other person.
Once again, it's Matthew 5:23-24.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the problem?
Let's see. Oh, don't let the sun go down on your wrath, Ephesians 4:26. And another one, a good one, is Acts 24:16. It talks about having a conscience void of offense toward God and man. And that's a wonderful feeling, to know today everything is right between me and my fellow man and between God. The five hardest words in the English language are, I'm sorry I was wrong. But if you get in a habit of saying them, it's like any habit, it comes easily. So learn to say, I'm sorry I was wrong. Number five, forgiveness. 1 Peter 4:8, love covers a multitude of sins. Proverbs 17:9, love forgets mistakes. Nagging about them parts the best of friends. Number six, be sensitive. Sensitivity. Know how people feel today. Proverbs 12:25, anxious hearts are very heavy, but a word of encouragement does wonders. But in order to be able to encourage somebody, you have to be aware of how they feel that day. You have to be sensitive. Proverbs 25:20, being happy-go-lucky around a person whose heart is heavy is as bad as stealing his jacket or rubbing salt in his wounds. That's Living Proverbs. So, there again, be sensitive. Be loyal. And this is confidences that we talked about when they share something to you. Be loyal to the one who has shared something with you. 1 Corinthians 13:7 says, if you love someone, something, you will be loyal to him no matter what the cost. Proverbs 17:7, a true friend is always loyal and a worker is born to help in time of need. You need some loyal friends. You really do. Carolyn needs your loyalty. Max Barnett needs your loyalty. So, you know, you go to them and say, I'm with you. You know, you might not always agree with their decisions or the activities they plan, but they need to know that you're behind them. A happy spirit is number eight. We should lift people up instead of dragging them down. And a woman sets the tone of her home. And I think when you're married and have your own home, you'll really see how true this is. Your husband can come home grumpy. Your children are fussy. It's up to you to sort of keep things together. whether it means, well, it means spending time with the Lord for one thing every day. It may mean taking a little nap in the afternoon so that you can, you know, carry you, yourself, and the rest of you through dinner with some peace and quiet. But do what it takes to have a happy spirit. And I know that some people, this is natural for them more than for others. Some people are just down. But develop a happy spirit. And it has to come from within. Proverbs 15:13 says, a happy face means a glad heart. So our faces, our countenance, does show what's going on inside. So ask God to turn you on inside so that you can show it on the outside. You know, I don't mean put up a front, because it does have to come from inside. Proverbs 17:22, a cheerful heart is good as medicine. And, of course, Proverbs 18:24, to have friends, you must show yourself friendly. There again, people won't come to you to be your friend. You have to go to them. Oh, my. The key to good human relations, 1 John 1:7, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Jesus Christ, his Son, cleanseth us from all sin. Walking in the light means obeying God. Then you'll have fellowship. 1 John 1:7. There are many advantages to living with people rather than alone. Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. You know, you put two pieces of iron together, they're going to sharpen. You can have an effect on someone else's life. You can help that person. You can sharpen that person. Then Ecclesiastes 4, verses 9 through 12, two are better than one because you can do more work and be rewarded. You can pick each other up when you fall. You know, if you're down today, like when I'm down, Russ picks me up. When he's down, I pick him up. Two are better than one. You can fight the enemy together. And let's say Satan is our enemy. You can fighting together. You can pray together. You can claim verses together. Another reason for living with people, Proverbs 13:20, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise. And this is a good reason for choosing the right type of people to live with. Choose wise people. You'll be wise if you associate with wise people. Romans 14:7, for none of us liveth to himself and no man dieth to himself. No man is an island. We do affect other people. What I'd like for you to do is take one of these characteristics, think about the negative as well as the positive. Maybe take one for a week or take one for a month, whatever you feel the Lord would have you to do. Think about it. Maybe memorize a verse on it. Ask God to change your life. And then at the end of the month or whatever, see how you're doing. See how you have changed. If you seriously do that, I know there will be a change in your life. Sunday I was reading a quote made by Ethel Waters, the black singer. And someone said to her, "You're looking bitter all the time." And she said, "Well, God is in the beauty business." And so, you know, God is making us beautiful. I mean, he can, if we let him. He'll make us beautiful inside as well as out.